Hey everybody, welcome to episode 12 of It's Just Bodybuilding with your hosts, me Ron Partlow, and of course Dusty Hanshaw. And today we got Coach's Corner, all types of questions. We're going to engage with you on It's Just Bodybuilding. Dusty, it looks like it's just us today.
Yeah, you know, we had a guest lined up, and he had some, we're going to call it car troubles, but with the social media world. So, sometimes you get multiple flat tires. It's maybe just time to change the tires or the way you drive. Yeah. People don't change.
No, man, but that's why we love Joe. So we were supposed to have Joe Donnelly on today, and what happened?
Well, he disappeared from Instagram again, and then this morning it hit me that I have a new phone, and I'm not one of those geniuses that like backs their phone up and shit. So it's like, I don't actually have Joe's number anymore.
Right.
So I called the gym that he trains at, left a message, and said, "Hey, if he pops in there today, remind him and just have him text me. Here's my number." Right. And obviously, I have not heard back from him. So either Joe doesn't love me anymore, which makes sense. People tend to get tired of me in time. Usually they move in before they realize they don't like me that much.
Right.
But he is down the street.
He's a little far away to not like you yet.
Yeah. I feel like I'm like, is my game getting that good where they're starting to like me before they even get to second base?
so just so everyone understands, taking Joe's Instagram away is a major thing. He's probably talking to lawyers. He's probably got stuff happening already because that's how he dealt with it last time, right?
Yeah, he got some money last time from this incident because it's a, you know, I mean, for some of us, it's, I mean, all of us make a living off of there, but he makes a ton off of his. And, you know, the political angle that Instagram not so shyly takes plays a role in that. So, and I think the only thing I was talking to a friend about this morning, it's comical, is like, even if they lose, it's like it's such pennies to them. It's like, oh,
yeah,
we owe you $100,000.
Yeah.
It'd be like me owing you 26 cents. It's like, oh, okay, we'll take it out of the ashtray.
Yeah. They don't like him and he doesn't like them. It's pretty obvious, but it's entertaining, and that's why we were going to have him on. So he's just got to deal with he's got to deal with this right now. And then we'll get him on at another date because, I mean, I talked to him on Instagram, so I know he'll be back.
Oh yeah, no, we'll have some fun for sure. I was excited because it was the only episode where I did have a little bit of a goal, which was just to establish his knowledge within the industry and then shut him up and then go have fun. Was kind of my big plan.
Yeah, because he is a smart guy. So it's Coach's Corner today. It's you and me. You had some things on your mind right off the bat. I know you were kind of itching to go.
Yeah, no, I didn't even want you to do the intro. I'm like, I got shit to do here. I got things that need to be said. But actually first, our man JP, who everyone absolutely loved that episode, he put up a story the other day and it was so good that I screenshot it just for this. And it might be a little bit, and you know it, but I just love it. So he writes on here, top tip: before you try to differentiate between what aspects of your quad you're trying to hit or what portion of your lat, what pec fibers, you actually need those muscles in general to have some density to even differentiate. Spend less time thinking about your cable fly setup and much more time working on how to get your incline barbell to four plates a side. I promise you will have an actual chest after 6 months of obsessing in the correct manner. So I read that, man, and it was such gold because as we joke, and we've even done it on the show, it always stuns me to see intermediate or even beginner, not just bodybuilders, but people working out trying to put on muscle, really like twisting and turning, and they're sideways on the incline bench with 10 pounds a side and all these things. And I know we've covered it, but just when he wrote down a number, it was funny because it's things that you and I already know, but it was still like a light bulb. Because I'm thinking, man, yeah, if more kids would just go in and go,
yeah,
I need to get to the point where I'm squatting 600 pounds for reps.
Yeah, that's extremely true. And, you know, I sometimes feel like we talk about certain things like too many times.
Then you realize that people keep chiming in on them. Keep
coming up and saying, thank you for that. That episode woke me up. That episode changed how I'm thinking about my training. I never even used the word volume until I started listening to you guys talk about training volume. I started thinking about intensity. So I don't mind covering these topics again because there's so much to them. There's 1,000 fibers off of this topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely true. Like, I think back... You know, when I see young guys in the gym, I think one of the things I did nail, like I screwed up lots of things in my career. I probably trained with too much volume for a while. I probably did a lot of things when I was injured that I shouldn't have done. You know, everyone made mistakes.
Of course.
But one thing I did not fuck up was I nailed my first 5 years of bodybuilding. I got like, I put on like 100 pounds, 110 pounds in the first 5 years I trained. Like, whatever I was doing there was really fucking perfect. Like, it was very efficient.
Right.
And it did its job. And I was a tall, skinny kid. I wasn't a big guy. So I filled out a frame really, really well the first 5 years I trained. And I just tried to get stronger on every single lift.
Right.
And all the basics. Like, I didn't do fancy stuff. I did, like, two different lateral variations, like dumbbell and cable, dumbbell press, machine press, rear delts. That was my shoulder workout for like 5 fucking years.
What I think is interesting too, though, is
add weight to everything as much as you can.
Yeah, just keep adding weight within the form, of course.
Yes,
but adding weight, and it's such a basic thing because I've, you know, I used to hear all the time from people who come in when I own my nutrition stores. Well, I heard that the weight doesn't matter as long as you're hitting the muscle. And I'm like, well, then why do you go to the gym? Why don't you just bust out some cans from your mom's, pantry, some beans, and just hit some lateral raises in the house? I mean, yeah. I can make my shoulders burn if I sit there long enough with, you know, some beans, depending on which ones. Black beans are slightly heavier, but anyways.
No, I know what you mean. And it's funny because all that stuff's true, but it has to be taken in context.
Right.
And that's what gets lost. Like, yes, weight doesn't matter if you're going to sacrifice form. That's right. The second part of the sentence.
Right.
But if your form is perfect and your textbook and you're locked in and you're mechanically moving the weight with the target muscle and all your joints are lined up correctly and you're in the groove, then yes, weight then matters.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Yeah. Like, a lot, right? A lot.
And yep. Yeah, you might move your hands to make the exercise harder, and that might mean you have to take a plate off. But now you're just working in a different context. Now that weight is now the weight you should be using.
Right.
You know, if you move your feet in and it makes it way, way harder, so you have to take a plate off, you're not training lighter. I don't think of that as training lighter because you're still training in a very difficult mechanical position and it's still very heavy.
Right.
Like there's a machine at my gym that I only put 2 plates on for squats. But where I put my feet and with my height and how it's angled, it's fucking brutal.
Right.
But to me, that's a heavy set because I only get like 6 to 8 reps on it.
Right.
And if I add a little bit of weight on it next time, that's progression. That's So it's not about how many plates are on there. It's about progression from that point with the same form.
Right. Well, and that's the key, like you said, is with the same form. Yeah. And understanding that as you get stronger – and the weight goes up, I think one thing I also like to push is it doesn't make it more dangerous. And what I mean by that is I've had people come in on my posts, you know, if I'm deadlifting 7-8 plates aside, and they'll be like, that's too heavy. You're going to get hurt, but it'll be 8 reps. And I'm like, but I did 8 reps. Now, if your friend Billy was deadlifting 315 for 2 and his second rep, his back was rolled forward and he barely squeaked it out, you'd be like, good set. Well, but right. His 315 is actually heavier than my 765.
Right. That's you exactly know what I mean? Right. Like people who say Ronnie Coleman trains super heavy, I'm like, well, he got like 10 to 12 reps with everything. Like for the most part. Like, if you watch his videos, he's doing like the 200s for 10.
Yeah.
He's not training in the 6 rep range. So he was actually for pretty moderate reps. He was training moderately heavy, but yeah, it's just that he was obscenely strong.
Yeah. that's the thing is, you know, and everyone wants to fall back on, you know, his injuries or where he's at now. And I'm thinking, yeah, but how many other guys trained more ballistic than him?
Yeah.
That aren't in that space. And we all, I mean, those of us who are actually in the know understand that what has him in his position now is actually he had some failed surgeries from an initial injury. But at the end of the day, you know, I read that post and it was just one of those things where it dinged, even for me, because it's like, if I had walked in the gym when I first started and just said, I want to bench 405 for 10. Well, when you're benching 405 or 10, you got a big chest. You probably got big ass triceps. You probably got some big front delts. You know what I mean?
Versus, wow, you're probably big everywhere by that point.
Yeah, you're just a big ass dude. And I think that's the magic that if you can push on people is just, again, and strength isn't, it is a little sticky when you say things like 405, but whatever's heavy to you is solid. Yeah. You know?
So you might have really bad mechanics for benching. So then you might be like 315 might be a really actually great bench for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have fucking super long arms and kind of a smaller rib cage. So, you know, you're just, or, you know, with really long humeruses and just like, you know, not ideal benchers. So it changes what's going to be a good bench for you. But the thing is, I think that sometimes new bodybuilders, they see like a really experienced vet doing something and it doesn't always apply to where they're at. You know, because like we talked about, I really think you should spend a lot of time trying to get strong. Like, you know, young guys have that ability to get stronger rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
They have that ability to progress. And when also too, want to throw a little love to the ladies watching, when we say guys, you know, I know we're, that's just the meathead in us, but I mean, we got all these ladies watching the show that train super hard. Like the number of girls that have come up to me, like, you know, just at my gym alone and said, you know, I'm thinking about like rep ranges and loads and volume now. Like,
right.
It's in my head now. It's a different way of thinking where before they might've been thinking of like, you know, fun exercises to do that were hard. Right. Right.
Yeah. But when I now, squeeze this,
yeah,
I feel it burn.
And so it's awesome. So yeah, definitely this all goes out to them, but that's, you know, that's how you add muscle is, you know, you have to tax and it's the meat and potatoes exercises that it's not that they're magic. It's just that they're so perfect. Like an incline barbell press is just such a fantastic exercise to get strong on.
Right.
Like you see a guy who's got a 4-plate incline, like you said, his physique looks a certain way. Like there's just no fucking way it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, I think that the other thing to remember is when you're thinking of your squat, your row, your press, your shoulder press, you know, your military press, now look around your gym and understand all the fancy equipment was built up trying to think, that's a great fucking movement. Now, how do we put it on a machine?
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't the other way. The machines didn't exist and someone said, let's simplify this.
Yeah, yeah, no, it came after. Yeah, yeah.
you know?
And yeah, also too, you know, when it comes to machines too, I'm actually like a huge fan of a lot of machines.
Oh, so
much. I remember when in those first 5 years I was training, I wasn't like a free weight purist. I was reading a lot of Mike Mentzer. I was reading Dorian stuff. And, you know, Mentzer was talking about how machines were even better for overload because they were safer.
Right.
So you could overload even more and you could, you know, do like force negatives safer. You could like, you know what I mean? Like the beyond
failure. You're not going to drift out of your form. As long as you don't move your body, the bar is stuck.
Yeah. So yeah. So yeah, machines were always seen as like a tool that I could train on to be even more insane post failure.
Right.
You know, so yeah, that's always been a big part of my training too. But the whole point was the post-failure, the overload, the training really hard, the, you know, pushing those exercises. Like I remember, you know, by grade 12, I was starting to pin stuff to stacks, you know?
Yeah. That's when you know you're excited because you're like, Dante actually had made me one of those. It was a pin, but it was like a cut off piece of a, like one of the smaller barbells.
Yeah, yeah.
Welded in, so I could actually stack a couple of plates onto the thing.
Yeah.
And depending on the machine, the older machines could take it. The newer ones, I found it actually would move the way that the stack sat.
Yeah, it torques dragging. The stack, and then it drags on the rail. It's so funny. There's a couple of old machines at West Coast. They're like the 30-year-old stuff, and I can pin stuff to the stacks, and they're smooth.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, no but effect.
Some new stuff, you pin stuff to the stack, and it like cranks on it. So,
see, we were trying to avoid sounding like the old tough guys, but now here we are. We're picking on the new guy.
We're picking
on the new stack versus the old stack. Well, new stacks just can't. They didn't walk to school uphill both ways in the snow like those old stacks did.
but you know, just getting strong on everything, like adding a 25-pound plate to the side lateral machine, just fucking going crazy on that thing, and like just trying to get stronger on everything. It really matters. Like, I don't want to say worry about the other stuff later because it's all important, but I really really prioritize getting stronger on everything and getting, you know, there's something about training explosively, like where you engage the weight and you bam, drive into it. That's very important. And, I don't mean bouncing out of, the bottom with momentum. I mean, you go into the bottom and then drive out. So it's just 100% maximum force on the bar when you're moving it. That's a huge part of it. And that's actually part of like making this the high threshold muscle fibers fire,
right?
You know, the stubborn fibers that take a lot to engage. That's, you have to think of that. Like, there's some of your muscle fibers are fucking lazy.
Yeah, and, well, they're not doing the, they're not picking up the Gatorade for you.
They're not picking up the Gatorade. They're not steering. They're not driving. They're not moving on the steering wheel. You know, and to get some of those, there's a genetic component to that too. To get all those to fire, you have to ask a lot of that muscle. So think of that. Think of that when you're training. Like, some of these fibers in your pec don't want to fucking do anything. They're lazy. And to get them to wake up and engage, you have to either load the fuck out of it or fatigue the fuck out of it, at least.
Yeah. So the other ones have nothing left to give. So now I guess I'll come help you.
You know, and that's why I believe that, you know, there's like, you know, always a genetic component, but that's why I believe that for a lot of people, training to failure is really necessary. I know there's, you know, people saying now it's, you know, if you get your volume just perfect, you don't have to and all that stuff. But I just think that, you know, I don't know if I think I have a lot of muscle fibers on me that only came to play when I fucking made them.
Right. No, I agree.
You know,
and I think that that's why people make comments, and I've heard it to me and to other bodybuilders and stuff, where someone will say like, you have muscles I didn't know existed. And I think, I mean, granted, some of that's just because you're overall bigger, but I think the other part is you're bringing in muscles that have to come out to play when you're that explosive. You know, like you said with the machines, like if you said to me, okay, you have to choose barbell row or Smith row for the rest of your life, I would take the Smith row.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's something that throws people off all the time. But for me, for my structure and everything, when I'm done with two heavy sets of Smith row, I can go home. I mean, you know, I've had many, many guys go, what part of the back does that hit? And I'm like, all of it.
That's what Johnny Jackson always says.
It starts at my back of my head and hurts all the way down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've heard Johnny Jackson say that to several people when they're like, you know, they see him doing something. They're like, what part of the back is that hit? He's like, all of it, like the whole thing, you know. I remember one time I trained with Johnny and the next day I said, hey Johnny, that fucking workout was pretty good, like my whole back is sore, you know, my traps are sore, my lats are sore, my erectors are sore, like the whole back sore, you know. And I go, I like that. And he's like yeah, everything's sore on me. It's like, my hands are sore, my forearms are sore, my biceps are sore, my shoulders are sore, my back's sore, my hips are sore. And he's like, that's just how I train.
I'm pretty sure my eyebrow grew yesterday.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny.
It's definitely the right way. So, you know, did you have some questions in there, too, that we had locked up for?
Well, yeah, so I actually had the first one I was going to ask, just because I kind of promised a guy on Instagram. He sends some good questions in once in a while. Oh, this one's from Kevin Egan, and he said, and you know, we might have gone over this a little bit, but I get this question from other people too. He said back thickness versus back width workouts. Is that just like nonsense terminology? Can you actually build a wider back without making a thicker back, or a thicker back without making a wider back? Like, how do you feel about it?
I mean, if you were arguing the science of it, your lat is your lat. You know what I mean? Your rhomboid is your rhomboid. It's either firing or it's not. But this is, for me, one of those areas where I never get away from the meathead land of the fact that, yeah, I can walk in the gym and destroy my width on all lat movements. And because I do them the way I do them, I can leave and I literally wake up the next day and just my lats would be smoked. You know what I mean? So I do think the reason that you find that split of like guys like Ronnie back in the day doing width and thickness was also just an overall volume and how much you can take in one workout situation. I mean, if you're doing deadlifts, heavy ass bent barbell rows and heavy ass T-bar rows, you don't really have anything left to do your pull downs and all that shit afterwards, you know? So I think you really, what you're running into those guys is a guy like Ronnie wants to make sure he taxes landscapers, you know?
Hey, Dory, you're in Arizona, man. They're everywhere.
They should be landscaping after the show. But you know what the problem is they know we usually start an hour earlier. So now
it's a fucking mess.
Okay. But anyways, I'm literally as he's blowing out like by my front door. I'm like, really, bro?
It's actually not that big of a deal, you know.
I'm about to sick Harvey on him, and you don't want that shit.
Yeah.
No, but back to the question. I mean, yeah, I think I do believe that although you're activating, like, you know, it's one of those tricky things. Like people say, oh, so the incline is for the upper pec, and I'm like, yeah. There's also really not such thing as an upper pec, so
right. I know what you mean. I agree with you. I think the terminology's misleading, but I understand the use of it. How's that?
Well, it's like Joe was saying last week of you know, a nerd can call you out and be like, dude, the lat either contracts or it doesn't.
Right.
Whether you're pulling down or back, it's either contracting or not, and we get that.
Yeah.
But now stop being up my ass about the there, or there spelling, and you know what I fucking meant.
Right. Right. I sort of see the width versus thickness back workout thing as how much, I guess maybe just my thinking was how much like lower back bent over strain is that workout. So when I think of a thickness workout, I think, okay, you're doing bent over like loading like T-bars, barbells. There's at least some of that in there or a deadlift movement.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a width day would probably involve no lower back pressure at all.
Right.
It would probably be all pull downs.
Pull down, yeah.
Maybe a machine row, maybe one row movement, but it would be chest supported.
Right.
You know, because I did that for a while. I had a thickness day, which was two rowing movements and a deadlift.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a couple days later, I did a two pull downs and a row.
Right.
So that's how I structured it. So it was six exercises a week, right? So my volume over the course of the week was kind of a normal, but it was split. And that worked well for me for a while. It's, you know, the whole lat firing, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, on a guy like me, if I want to get my inner traps sore, you know, like my upper back sore, I really do have to do an elbow out movement.
Right.
You know, like my inner back doesn't get sore from, if I do a pull down day, it doesn't get sore. If I want to get it sore, I have to like target it. Right. So yeah, I think that's accurate too. You could use those terms.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's where everybody gets caught up on it though, is the technicality of the fact that there's no such thing. Cause I've listed that before too. Like, well, for back thickness, and there's always that one asshole. I'm like,
yeah. Yeah. I sort of think though, you know, like, your spinal erectors run all the way up your back underneath everything.
Right.
And you have to load them to get a that for me to think of it as a thickness day.
Right, exactly. It's going that way.
Yeah, there's got to be some kind of heavy bent over movement, even if there's just one or two in there, but there's something going on where you're like fucking the whole back's like, you know, yeah, loaded to the hilt. For okay. Sure. You got one?
I'm leaving the questions to you because I've got my rants lined up today. I already told you.
Oh,
I'm on fire today.
Yeah. Let's hear one of your rants. I know you said it had something about Chris you wanted to talk about.
Well, so you know, over the weekend I had a few fun occurrences within bodybuilding. But one of them was between Chris and a couple other guys. A lot of us are getting people ready right now for nationals and different shows. Right. And it's just fascinating to me. And I actually put a post about it today, is the fact that somewhere along the line, athletes are forgetting that there are levels to success in bodybuilding. And I think what ends up happening is you're working with someone who's getting ready for their first pro qualifier, or they're ready to win a pro qualifier, and they find themselves in the best shape of their life, and they're 3 weeks out, and they're hungry, and they're tired, and all the way down the list. And then their brain starts telling them, because they're tired and they're hungry, I think I'm flat. I think, right. You know, when am I going to eat more? And it became something where, just literally coincidentally, just chatting with three or four different guys in the same boat,
yeah,
I realized, like, wow, like, so many of you guys don't understand that even though this is your best, you're not ready to win yet. You know, and these are guys who are like you and I, or maybe a little better, or a little worse genetically, meaning, dude, you have to fucking nail it. I've beaten many guys that are much better bodybuilders than me.
Oh, same here. Because
everything lined up perfectly, and I would hate to have 10 goes with them because I'd win two or three.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I feel the same way.
But it's one of those things where it's like, so when you're one of those guys and these people that we were discussing are all kind of in that wavelength where they're not Cedric, who we also discussed yesterday, and as far as what he did to win the show over the weekend, you and I would have been a fucking mess with what he did in the last 24 hours. And it just shows that there's levels to genetics, there's levels to the sport. So I think what's happening is with these guys is they're the best they've ever been, and they're not realizing that they need someone that looks at them and goes, yeah, your best is still not good enough yet. But good news, we have 3 weeks, and if you just keep living every day like it's your freaking last chance to suffer, you might squeak out and beat some guys you shouldn't beat, and that's how you're going to turn pro.
Right. I always was told when I was starting that if you see anyone who's in fantastic condition on stage, they definitely felt skinny for a while.
Right.
Like, that was just programmed in. Like, they're like, you're going to feel skinny. Get ready for it. It's going to come. It's your biggest enemy. It's the worst voice you can listen to. It's the thing that's going to prevent you from being shredded. It's the ultimate obstacle. It's what you've come down, you've lost 20 pounds, 30 pounds, everything's coming in, and then you're 6 weeks out or 5 weeks out and you feel like you're really skinny and flat. Mm-hmm. And you start to question everything, and you start to feel like, oh shit, my shirt's baggy on me, or whatever the fuck, or your pants feel smaller. And like, that's when most guys just can't help it. They just start like eating or having cheat meals or watching their weight too much or whatever, and you're going to have to feel that way. Like, I don't know, like, there's obviously a line where some guys can get away with it more than others. But I mean, like, the female athletes that I help,
right?
Like, they must feel like twigs because they're already like 130 pounds, you know?
Yeah. Even the big ones, when you see them in person, you're like, you're tiny.
Yeah, like, even if they're like 155 on stage, they're still not big. Like, they feel really flat and stuff. But you look at them and you're like, holy smokes, you look great. Like, the lighter you get, the better, you know?
Yeah, you start to look bigger, but not in your brain.
Yeah, and so it's something that you have to be ready for. And I don't know if maybe just people need to hear that, like, when they start their prep. Like, they just,
I think,
need, that, like,
some of it too is I don't know when, and maybe you can shed some light on this because you've been in the game longer than me, but when did it become a thing where people thought it mattered if you were flat 6 weeks out? Like, who cares? You don't need, you can be flat.
Yeah.
Be flat for weeks.
Everyone's really worried about losing muscle. But one thing I found, and I look back on this now, you know, and I'm like, oh shit, you know, interesting. I never thought of it that way, but I never considered myself to have great genetics for putting on muscle, or, you know, that sort of stuff. But yet I still found it, when I look back, like, I don't lose muscle easily.
Right.
And so if here I am with like mediocre genetics, and as long as I train really hard and keep my protein high and take some good stuff, I don't lose muscle.
Right.
People with good genetics must be pretty much invincible. like they can possibly lose muscle. They must be able to diet super hard.
Right.
But you know what I mean? And so I just think people, like, they don't have to worry about it. Muscle's not going to fall off them. Going flat's different than actually losing muscle.
For sure.
Like, you can drop 8 pounds in like a 10-day period just by depleting down. I'm just using round numbers for an average big, you know, average dude. Like, if I was like, okay, I got to push you hard for the next 10 days, I wouldn't mind if someone's weight came down 6 pounds or something like that. That might be too much for most people. 6 pounds, 8 pounds. I wouldn't care, because they're just depleted. They're not actually losing muscle.
Right.
And then you hit them with like 2 high days in a row and they go back up, you know, 5 pounds. So they're only really down 3.
Yeah. But they look way harder.
Yeah.
Now,
but they look way harder.
Yeah.
You know, so people are afraid if their weight drops too fast, they think they have to eat a meal. It's like, you don't realize how much crap you weigh. We're all way fatter than we think.
Well, what's your thought on this? And I've got mine, but I'm going to let you hit it first, is the mentality of losing weight and gaining weight, and a fear of being flat. Like, what are your thoughts on the negative side effect of just sitting around and thinking about, I wonder if he's going to feed me soon. I wonder if I get a cheat meal soon. I wonder if he can see I'm flat. Like, I guess what I'm looking at is, in my brain, these are all negative things you're reminding yourself of.
Yeah.
As opposed to positive.
Yeah. And then another thing is just the starting point for that thinking. So I wonder if he can see I'm flat. Well, first of all, let's assume the pictures are good or the video's good.
Or that you're not just fucking hungry and you're not flat at all.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. If you're sending him, if you're sending your coach good video and you look good in the video, then that's the end of the discussion.
Right.
Like, you're not flat. Like, you know, I wonder if he can see. Well, make sure your pictures are good and then don't worry about it.
Right.
You know, that's extra motivation to make sure you're sending really accurate photos and really accurate video, is so that your coach can really know what's going on. But yeah, you know, and I'd way rather have an athlete 85% full on stage than 110% full with less detail.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, most of the time, depending on their physique, obviously there's going to be the odd exception or something like that. But for the most part, like, you know, that's why so many people fuck up their carb load too, is because they swing for the fences. They try to hit a grand slam home run with every single appearance. But sometimes just get a base hit. Your glutes are shredded. You look great.
Yeah.
You fill up like enough that everything pops and strikes and you're going to crush everyone. Like, quite often that's the case at some of these shows too. Right. And so, you know, it just depends on the athlete, but people who swing like grand slam for the fences. I mean, we see it at the Olympia all the time. There's always someone who's like just shredded coming into the show.
Yeah.
And then they show up like watery, super spilled over or something like that. There's always someone.
Yeah.
And, it's just not worth, it's not worth it.
Well, that's the thing is, when, like, how many times, I mean, truthfully, have you been to a show at any level and you see a guy and you're like, man, if he was in shape, this thing would be lights out.
Yeah.
I don't have that in the opposite very often, where I'm like, that guy's so fucking peeled. If he was more full, he would win. Well, he'd probably gonna win anyways, or he wouldn't have won no matter what.
Yeah.
Versus probably the other guy.
Yeah.
You
probably
know what I mean?
Wouldn't, like, wouldn't have won no matter what. Like, you know, I saw a guy at a show a couple weeks ago. He like walked out on stage and I was like, holy fuck, this guy's so shredded. He's gonna win this class, because I hadn't seen the rest of the class yet.
Yeah.
And then he wound up in like sixth or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, because he didn't have it no matter what. Yeah,
he didn't have it no matter what. Like, the structure and stuff wasn't there, right?
Yeah.
But it's never the other way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly how I look at it. You know, it's the same thing I think I mentioned on the show before. When you see a guy in big baggy pants and big arms hanging out, and you're like, I wonder if he has legs.
You're not sure.
You don't know. But if you see a dude in like a hoodie and he's got like 30-inch thighs, you're like, his arms are fucking huge.
He's probably big everywhere.
Like, you just assume, like, if you have those legs, you've got the balls to train for the arms. So I'm not too concerned.
Yeah, no, definitely. How have you been feeling about the feedback?
Feedback's been awesome, man. I mean, I think what I'm really liking is the fact that, like you said, sometimes it feels redundant. And it's kind of funny, but one of the people, so I've got a financial advisor that takes care of all my investing. And I was asking him about the show because he listened to a couple episodes. I was like, I'm a little worried about the fact that we kind of go over the same thing. And he goes, well, I do that with you every time you come in. And I go, what do you mean? And he goes, well, the same four things make you money. So that's all we ever talk about. He goes, I could tell you a bigger scope story. He goes, but truthfully, it's these four things that are making you money.
So
he goes, I think you're losing track. Like, you're almost falling into that mindset of, I wish there was more to tell him. He goes, but these really are the secrets. These are the secrets to getting big.
And these are
the secrets to making money. He goes, do you really need there to be more secrets? Or are you just happy I keep adding your portfolio? And I'm like, yeah, valid.
Yeah, yeah. speaking of investments, I've actually got an exciting day on the agenda tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So after we had Aceto on, because Aceto and I have talked about properties many times, because I've been saying I want to get into, you know, investing in property and get another one and all that sort of stuff. So it was just kind of funny timing when we had him on.
Right.
And so I messaged him right after and I said, hey, actually, like, you know, I've been meaning to bug you about some advice for, you know, a move I'm planning to make. Right.
Right.
And so he got back to me and we started talking and he told me right off the bat, you know, I told him my situation, like, you know, how much I had to do, how much I had to invest and what I was thinking. And he shot me back a quick plan, like just how Chris is, just bam, right in your face. Here's what you do. You get this, you get this, check for this, send me three options. I'll have a look at them.
I love Chris. That's how he functioned in everything.
So I send him a couple links and he goes, top one, best deal. And then he goes, I don't know your rate up there. I don't know, you know, because he doesn't know Canada, right? So he's like, right. check your how long you can lock the interest rate in for or whatever. And then I sent it to my buddy that sold my house when I moved away from Edmonton.
Right.
Because I'm in Edmonton, the prices are low right now. It's a buyer's market.
Right.
But it's also a renter's market. So you have to have a nice place, right?
Right, yeah.
But it's I think it's a good time. So I sent him the property. I said, I want this. And he goes, I'm on it. And then, like, within about 15 text messages, I got a flight to Edmonton booked tomorrow.
To go
look at three fourplexes and one sixplex.
Oh, nice.
And, I'm kind of blown away that everything's just kind of worked out to this point. So I'm going to look tomorrow. I'm flying in and out in the same day. So
I've only done that a couple of times in my life and it wasn't that far.
No, it's only an hour and 20 flight, I think, but I'm flying in. My realtor's picking me up from the airport. We're going to look at all four spots and he's dropping me off at the airport and I'm fucking coming home.
He's all, we'll discuss it when you land back in Vancouver, which one?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I, you know, out here, everything's just so fucking expensive. Like, you know, and I mean, I could get like a place, but Chris said, what you want to do is get a fourplex, right? He really said, like, you want to have multiple units. There's a bunch of reasons
doors,
why.
Yeah.
And in case one's empty, you still have most of it covered. Like, there's a bunch of reasons, right?
Yeah.
You know, get some cash flow going, that sort of thing. So he told me more units, the better generally. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that's my,
that's
my
awesome,
plan.
Man.
It's funny that you
brought that up though, because, that was something I wanted to go into and we will go into when we have Joe on. I had a lot of feedback after Chris of like, can we venture into some of the other things that that guys in the industry are doing? Because that's something I get on the regular with, and I'm sure you do too, is how do these guys make their money? Or what are they, you know what I mean? And I don't think that a lot of people realize that just like any other business, you take the money you make from bodybuilding and you put it into something else.
Yeah, yeah, the money you make out of this industry is that's not the money.
Yeah, like that's like that's the, how you do all the money you got to use. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I think it's cool because that is something that's, I don't know how often you do this, but it's a good topic. Is I have kids that reach out to me and they say, you know, what advice do you have for someone who wants to get into bodybuilding and get to where you are? And I said, find a career that makes you a lot of money.
Yeah, I guess.
And they're like stunned. They're like, no, but I said bodybuilding. I'm like, but you're going to need that fucking money.
Yeah. I just told a guy this the other day. There was this young guy at my gym. He like pretty impressive, eh? He's like for his age and stuff. I was like, shit. And he goes, what do you think I should do? And I said, well, what do you do for a living? And he goes, well, you know, my family owns a construction business and I'm helping my dad with it. We're doing this and developing property. And I go, oh, okay, you're fine.
Keep doing that. Don't ever walk away from that.
Don't fuck that up.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to quit that to train.
Yeah, it's always an amazing thing to me is like, oh, I can't wait until I can quit so I can just focus on training. And I'm like,
it's like,
how long does it take you to eat six meals a day,
work out,
and train? Like, what the fuck are you going to do all day?
Yeah.
You know, I think I'll be so much better. I'm like, no, I think I'll be bored. I think I'll be broke.
The easiest contest prep I ever did was when I was going to college full time.
Right.
Because I was just like, my mind was always on something else. It was just, the prep was just software running in the background.
Right. Like, but that's a perfect example that you were so busy, but all you had to do is remember at 2 o'clock to open that jar or that bowl and eat it and then close it and keep moving.
Oh, my classes were just perfectly. I picked them perfectly with perfect meal breaks.
Right.
It was just like, I nailed everything about setting that prep up, you know?
But that's bodybuilding, man. I mean, it's the same thing. I have people that's, I've got a couple guys right now, literally, that said, hey, when do you want me to compete next year? Because we're looking into 2020 now. I'm like, what's school schedule look like? When should we not be brain dead?
Yeah. When you're, exactly.
And then they tell me when they need to not be brain dead. And then I find the show based on that because, you know, I think much like the same thing I have a conversation I have with my Gen Pop clients. Don't try to fit bodybuilding, like your life into bodybuilding. Have your life fit bodybuilding into it. You know what I'm saying? Like people want to do it backwards. Well, I can't work because I got to train at 2. Why don't you just train at 6, asshole? It's not that complicated.
Right.
Like, you know, when I owned my stores, when I bought them out from my partner, I was working. I'd leave my house at 9. I'd get home about 9 every day. So in the morning, I'd knock out cardio, meal prep, all that stuff. And I would come home at night and I would train at 10 p.m. That's when I could get to the gym. And in the beginning, it sucked because I'm a morning guy. And then you just adapt and all good, you know. Yeah. And like you said, my schedule was so jammed. I was so busy that, like you said, it's like you woke up one day. I was like, oh, fuck, I had an airplane. It's time to go to the show.
Yeah,
like, exactly. Everything else is just execute because you don't even have time to think. Whereas, you know, now it's funny, but obviously working from home and things. Last year when I competed, I remember thinking like, how did I used to do this? Working 12-hour days. Because like, I still feel, I mean, granted, I have a bunch of clients and stuff, but I mean, my life is way easier now than it was then. I just remember thinking like, damn, it must have been really hard. I don't remember it being hard because I just had to do what I had to do and that was it. You know what I mean?
You weren't spoiled yet.
Yeah,
you
know, I'm glad it happened in the order it did because it would be really hard to go that way now.
Right.
This is busy. Yeah, you're doing it now. You just started experiencing my life, so you understand.
it's interesting, and also too, like I look back at the last year I competed, where I traveled 7 full weeks out of the prep.
It was funny that deal right there. I'll tell you right now, you bring me that itinerary, I'm like, I'm not competing.
Yeah, like I look back, I'm like, holy shit, I had to fire that year. Like, you know, because I knew that was going to be my last.
You had made a decision. That's kind of how you did it.
So I was like, well, if I'm going to say this is my last nationals, then I'm going to fucking go out like the same way I came in. Like I'll do anything.
Right.
You know?
And that's another level of anything though, man. I mean, especially for bodybuilders. I mean, I know you. I know how you live and function and everything like that. So you're not the you're really not the exception in that you prefer everything to be you know, I train at this time, I wake up at this time, I do this at this time, but you just fucking find a way.
Yeah, you just find a way. Like, you know, if your day ever gets scrambled, you just, like, there's a point where I think people have a hard time dropping the plan.
Right.
It doesn't take long for me to do that. Like, if I recognize that things are about to get fucked for, like, a plan, I think that the quicker you realize that and drop the plan, the faster you can proceed with the new plan and adapt and get going and sometimes even make up time or whatever.
No, you know I agree. What I mean? That's actually, it's such a simple statement you just made, but it's actually profound in bodybuilding because it's true. I mean, here today, this will make you laugh, but because everything is so exactly how I want it right now, you know, I text you at 10:30 Arizona time, which is when we start the show. I'm like, where the fuck are you? And you're like, 10:30 Pacific. I'm like, ah, shit, you assholes still change time. Arizona, we don't do daylight savings. So my training is usually at 11 a.m. On Mondays, it's at 1:30. Now I'm like, can't make 1:30. Huh. But I've been eating for 1:30 all day.
Right.
Right? And then I text my training partner. He's like, well, I can do 2, but I can't do 2:30. And here's how my plan drops now. We're training tomorrow. I just dropped the whole thing. Go, I'll get my meals in this way, and we're training tomorrow because I'm not going to squeak and turn and have an okay workout today. But again, it's an example of the same thing where because I have the freedom, fuck it. I just drop the whole day, move back on, and tomorrow I'll be ready to rock, which would have been an off day. But I think that that's something where I'm such a schedule junkie, and I've had people pick on me because I literally have everything like this. And they're like, you do realize no one's waiting for you, right? Like, it's not actually an appointment. Like, I know that you like to take a nap at 9:40, but I don't think that Harvey here gives a fuck if you do it at 11.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say, how's things with Harvey? How's the adaptation? How's he taking over the house?
Dude, there hasn't. It's the only tricky thing is, and people who know me well understand, like, so I'm OCD, so the house is, like, I think that my housekeeper wonders why I have her come, because there's really nothing for her to do.
She, like, walks around and just kind of, like.
But she makes it smell better. Like, when she comes in, it's very lemony when I come home, which I love.
It's funny. You leave her in the house for 3 hours. She just walks in, smokes dope on your couch and watches TV, and then before you come home, she just sprays the place with lemon pledge.
She walks out with it, just spraying, and walks out of the room.
And you're like, fuck, this place smells fresh.
Yes, I told you she was worth the money. But so the tricky part is I have 9 toys all over my house now. And that's been the only thing that's been an adaptation because they're everywhere. And I'm like, so in my brain, see, I don't have kids, obviously. And I bet it was the same for you guys when you first brought Jed home, because it's like, you know, because Zoe was blind by the end, so there were no toys. And she just chilled with me.
Yeah, and you were living with a retired dog, so you didn't have.
She and I are the same fucking person, blind and sleeping all the time. Yeah. So that part has been a little bit interesting, but other than that, man, it's been insane because she or he, she's like, I've called him she so many times, he's gonna be gay soon, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with him being gay. He looks gay anyways, so he sleeps through the night. He eats on his schedule. He has only made a mistake in the house one time, and that was actually my fault because we went out. He peed, and then I was in a hurry, so I brought him in, and then he shit, and I'm like, fuck.
Right.
All right, that was my fault. So that's awesome. And then I think I gotta see the main trainer, but somewhere between 7 and 10 weeks from now, he goes into to Matt's business, the Canine Games, and I'm having him train as a service dog.
Oh, okay. And then you can get away with
it. Like a real service dog, though, where they got their little mission and I can take them anywhere I want. So, because I'm like, I don't really want to hang out alone. So why don't we just drop the money in this? And it's one of those things, too, people look at and they're like, oh my God, it's so expensive. Because I think it's going to be like $7,000 or something like that. But my brain, I work backwards. I'm like, well, he's going to live to be 12 years old, 7 divided by, yeah, we're good. That's not that much.
So Jesus fuck, $7,000. So, you know, you can just do what everyone else does and buy one of those service dog vests and just put it on them and just lie to everybody.
Lie. No. No, I do not. I refuse. Because I always love those people because their dog is like walking up to people and being an asshole. And I'm like,
yeah,
you look like an idiot.
Yeah, your dog's not a service dog at all.
You know, it's funny because I was like, well, we got to create a reason that, this magical thing he's going to do for me. Because I have a friend who had some PTSD, and his dog is service dog trained by them as well. And the dog can actually tell if you're getting worked up. And he will, on his own, just walk up and like put his arms on you, and like, and it brings you back down to normal. And I'm like, right. Well, if I have this dog do something every time I do something fucked up, he's going to be working all day. So we're going to have to come up with something a little more exact.
Right, right.
Dad's now, stressed out again. He's 3 minutes late eating lunch.
Now, one of the funny things that reminds me of is your friend Matt that you train with there. Yeah. He's done very well with business.
Well, that's his business. That I'm
thinking. He's got a ton of businesses. But I remember, you know, he owns a shit ton of stuff, like different shit. Mm-hmm. And I said to him once, I go, which business makes you the most money? And he goes, the dog training one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, because it was kind of surprised me. And he said, yeah. So he told me that that business was owned by a lady who had really happy customers, but not enough of them.
Yep.
So she just couldn't get her business going. But everyone that used her was super happy. But she was just had this numbers problem, like marketing issue or something, right? And so Matt came in and like took a big percentage of the business to help her, and like, what, 10 times it in like a year?
Yeah, it's been ridiculous now, but that's such a common thing because, you know, it's like a chiropractor. You go to school to become a chiropractor. No one teaches you how to run a business. No one teaches you how to market. You can crack backs.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but you need someone to come in and want to get cracked.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Another friend of mine that has a GED owns like 10 chiropractic clinics because he is a hustler and he knows how to run business. So it's the same shit as dealing drugs on the street like he used to do. Now he owns chiropractic clinics and a bunch of doctors work for him because, again, they know how to crack backs, but they don't know how to run a business.
Right. That's the old my A student or your A student works for my C student.
Yeah, well, it's so accurate, though, because it's one of those things where, and it's not always the case, but at the end of the day, you know, I think that, and I know Ryan and I with Mutant, we always laugh because I blame everything on marketing. I'm like, marketing makes sales.
Right.
You know, which I truly know that they work hand in hand. But if someone were to ask me which one was the more important, as long as you have a good product, I'd be like, marketing.
Right.
You know, and that's how this business is. I mean, her product is ridiculous. And I did actually look into other businesses, and they are the best at what they do through and through and through. So our fans on the show, and then obviously mine on Instagram and stuff are going to be Harveyed out soon, because I'm gonna be doing a lot of videos there working with them and shit, because that's the only thing I asked for. I was like, well, I want to come do it because I want to know how.
I got a couple questions here. I got some non-bodybuilding questions.
Let's roll. I like those ones.
So this one says, Dusty posts about his vehicle sometimes, and you don't really post about vehicles. What would your dream vehicles be if you could drive anything? And
you're,
I know
first,
you like,
man, because I'm curious about your answer because you don't give a shit.
Well, I'm not a vehicle guy. Like, I see, like, who do I, like, some of the guys, like, Fuad posts, like, which one do you like better?
Like every 3 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. He'll put like two vehicles up. Go, which one do you like better? You know, one's kind of street truck and one's like a four wheel drive truck, you know? And, and I have an opinion on that stuff. Right.
Right.
I'm like, oh fuck, I like that one better. But I've just never been into vehicles like myself. You know, I've had some cool, a couple cool vehicles, but just not really into them. It was never really a thing in my family. Like, even my brother, who's an infectious disease specialist and makes a lot of money, he has never bought a new vehicle.
Yeah, because he thinks it's stupid.
He makes like, you know, what's he make? $350, $400 a year. I don't know what the fuck IDs make. Right. But whatever, it's
enough
it's,
that he can afford much more. He can afford a new car whenever he wants.
He could buy a Ferrari if he wanted, and he doesn't have one. He drives like a 4Runner.
Right. Hey, there's nothing wrong with 4Runner.
No, you know what I mean? But like, he didn't even buy it new. It's like a 2013 4Runner, whatever the fuck he's driving right now.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It's just funny. And so my family's always been like that. We never really give a shit. So, you know, and I mean, I got a friend who drives a McLaren, like, yeah. fucking just funny. Like, I'm like, you're driving around in a house, man. Like,
yeah, exactly.
So it's funny to me. But I really love just a nice, comfortable, reliable, you know, like I love Grand Cherokee SRTs and like the top of the line 4Runners and the top of the line Lexus SUVs and stuff like that. That's, I guess I like driving that sort of stuff. Right. I don't know if I would ever, I would never buy a supercar, but one thing I would buy, because I've actually looked at them to see how much they were, just to see if I could put it on my vision board, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Was like a 1979 to 1981 Ferrari 308.
Right.
Which is the car Magnum used to drive. Remember Magnum PI?
I knew immediately, yep.
So I remember I grew up watching that show, and I love the Ferrari 308. I think that's just the most classic Ferrari.
I mean, like when Ferraris became cool, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's that just classic Ferrari styling. And I would love to have a 308 one day, a red 308 with the Targa top and everything. Right. That'd be a fucking cool, like, cool Sunday driver.
Yeah. That's when you know you've done it right, when you have a car that you only drive occasionally.
Yeah, and it's the car that you dreamt of off your favorite TV show when you were a kid.
Right, yeah. No, I definitely get that. I think that that's a cool thing. For me, I mean, if we're talking just obscene, I can say that irregardless of financial success, I would never do this, but I do love the Rolls-Royce Ghost. It's just a boat, sick-ass car, but I can
handmade.
Say, I can say without question, I mean, I'm not even exaggerating, it wouldn't matter what happened, at no point would I be like, oh, I'm going to go drop $300,000 on a car.
Right.
It's just, it's not in me, because I found, so earlier in my stupidity of making money, I got successful really early at one point, and I bought a six-figure car. And I remember, like, when I first drove it, just being like, this is so awesome. Like, every time I'd get in it, I was like, yeah. And then after about a month, it's just a fucking car, and you just got to go to Safeway. And the car payment doesn't drop when you realize that it's just a car and you just got to go to Safeway. So now my range is just a totally different thing. A car I will buy probably in the next couple of years is I want to get a Defender 110. They don't make them here anymore. But they stopped making them, I believe, in 1997 here. The Defender 90s, the Defender 110s, those are they're Land Rovers. But they Land look Rovers. Like old Ford Broncos, essentially.
Right.
Okay. The 110 is a four-door version. The 90 is a two-door version. I'll have one of those probably soon. But that's another car where I would just buy it and keep it. I would drive it, you know, especially if I was here, because, like, this time of year, the top would never be on it. I would just drive around town. But it's not a car I would drive every day. So I would keep... I'll always probably now have a Lexus like I do now, because I finally, I'm going to use the word grew up, but grew up to the point of realizing that I'll always be an idiot and I will always buy another car. So I just started leasing them, because I know I have the attention span of a two-year-old, and in two or three years, I'm going to need another one.
Well, it's funny. I had to give myself a pat on the back because, you know, I watch a lot of Gary Vee, right? You know, Gary Vee on Instagram, and, you know, he's always talk about, you know, financial and, you know, investing and all that stuff. And one of the things he often has talked about is not buying stupid shit, right? That's one of his main things. It's like, don't buy stupid shit. And he talks all the time about how he drove like a shitty old pickup until he was worth well over $1 million.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I owned like two companies and three properties before I bought my first new vehicle.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, something like that. And so here I am, you know, I drive a Jeep Grand Cherokee, but it's like 11 years old, it's completely paid for, cost me nothing.
Yep.
It's just, I don't give a shit. Like, someone door dinged me the other day and I didn't even get out of my fucking car.
But just so everyone knows, because I am me, Ron's car is clean and not beat to shit.
It's in good shape.
I got to make sure I list that, because when you say something like that, it sounds like, oh, Rod's like a fucking dirty bastard.
No, it's like I take good care of my Jeep and stuff. I get it serviced, and that's why it still runs. And, you know, it's tidy. And but someone, like, opened their door next to me, and they
heard it.
Yeah, they hit my door, and they kind of, like, looked in and looked at me like, And I just kind of like went back to my phone. I was like, and they just like closed the door. And then like the next day, I thought, oh, I better check that. And I like looked.
Yeah, we fucking nailed it.
I couldn't see anything. I was like, ah, it's fine. You know, but it's just one of those things.
As I would hear, here's the takeaway from this. Ron is the smart one. And I think that I would tell people that, though, like all kidding aside, because it is a waste of fucking money. Like, if you're a car person, awesome. And you know what? We all waste money on shit, so do your thing. But, I mean, I could say for sure, the vast majority of cars, best thing I ever read that I would pass on to people is a quote from Jay-Z. And it says, if you're buying something you can't buy twice right now, you can't afford it.
Not and a I bad think that's line.
A perfect analogy, because the car I have now, I could buy two of them today.
Right.
So, good. Well, I couldn't say that the first time I started buying German autos. I was squeaking in.
And
there's a big difference between being able to pay for something and being able to afford it.
That's another good piece of advice, too. You know, being able to afford it is different than being able to pay for it.
Yeah, no, I afforded things for a long time. I shouldn't have bought.
Well, you paid for things,
but I couldn't afford things. Them.
There's something about dating in there too, isn't there? There's a good dating analogy in there somewhere. Maybe Dusty.
I buy it all, buddy.
Yeah, you could definitely expand on that if we went down that road.
That's gold. What else we got? Anything from?
Oh yeah. So let me check this one here.
Went around the horn today. We're all over the fucking
place. No, we're going to ask Dusty a question here. Dusty said that he had John Jewett make him a program.
I did say that.
What did he change, and what's he doing differently?
We changed everything.
Okay.
So I emailed John, and John's a great dude. First,
make sure you explain why. Because you know how to train, and you built like a fucking monstrous, you know.
And I write training for people all the time. But here's the key is after a while, I think truthfully what happened, and I haven't been like super out there, but shit was just a mess. You know, life was a mess. Eating was a mess. Nothing was kind of lining up. And I started to realize that with the way that I train, I was probably destined for an injury soon. Because mentally, when I walk into a gym, it doesn't matter what I ate today. It doesn't matter if I slept. Doesn't matter if I'm hydrated. I'm just strong. I will look at the number and probably beat it, or get hurt. And I started to realize that. And then I was looking at my physique, and you know, I was like, you know what? I had seen pictures of John. He put up a front double. You should, in fact, sorry, Scott, but I'm gonna send you the thing. We're gonna put this in here. He put up a picture of a front double 1 year apart, and he had done insanity to his waist. His front double, sorry, John, was shit a year ago. And now it's fucking awesome. So he brought his waist way down, obviously using some vacuuming and things like that on a regular basis. So I was like, you know what? I want to do that. I need to do that. So I hit up John, and I was like, hey, I want to get that program, but I actually want you to just write me an entire program. I want everything.
Yeah.
And he was cool. He emailed me back. He goes, I'll just tell you how to do that. Simple. He goes, you probably know. I'll say how I did it. I said, cool. No, I want you to write everything. I want totally new. And he was, you know, I mean, very typical of these conversations. Too much respect. And finally, I just emailed him. I said, John, treat me like an idiot. Write me a program. So he was like, okay. So he's writing me a push-pull legs, but we're doing some very specific things now where, for example, because of my triceps, my shoulders actually need to get bigger. People always see pictures of me in shape, and they're like, man, your shoulders are crazy, but truthfully now my triceps have kept growing to the point that we're barely training them so that my shoulders don't look small. I mean, it was the first thing John goes, he goes, I hate to say this because your shoulders aren't big enough anymore. He's like, they're not small, but they're not big enough. So we brought that in. We changed some of the leg training. I mean, basically, like, some of my days are comical. I'm training hamstrings, this, that, and oh, by the way, hams, quads, back, buys one day. Like, I mean, I think people watch me in the gym. They're like, "What is wrong with him? He's doing everything."
It's fairly like it's still on the lower volume end of things. Then I take it if you're doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and some things are a touch. Like my arms were barely touching because they really don't need a bunch of size.
So your arms are like an easy cold 22.
Yeah, so they're not. Right. And I mean, even though it's primarily tricep, John was like, "With what you need elsewhere, I really don't want to put too much pressure on your arms. So we're just gonna tap them once a week."
Right.
And it's literally like, so like yesterday or 2 days ago, I did a tricep press down for three sets of 15 to 20 and two sets of skull crushers, and that was it. Right. You know, so very basic.
Okay.
Whereas shoulders get tapped, they get blasted twice a week and touched once. Right. You know, so it's a very, it's cool. It's fun because it's totally different. And I have, you know, I have tossed a couple things. Like I hit back to him and I was like, "Hey, for the back training, it was very squeezy." And I was just seeing that I was like, "Hey, I need at least one grip it and rip it because I feel like I'm not doing shit in here." You know what I mean? He's like, "Okay, do this." So no, I love it. It's very different. And once again, it's something I've been kind of jamming on guys is don't think you know everything, because now there's some tweaks I've got in my arsenal that I learned from him that I'm like, I'll use this for some of my guys.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's the game of the whole thing is, you know, every time I've ever hired someone or even conversations, you know this. I mean, how many times have I told you, let me see what that routine looked like real quick.
Right.
Like, you know, everything about being in this industry is learn.
Well, one of the things, that I try to remember is that even when I train with someone who's like a relative, well, I don't even use the word newbie because, you know, whatever, but you know, if I train with someone who's only been training a couple years, and I'll quite often say, "Hey, let's do a superset next," you know, or something. Let's just give an example. I'll say, "Hey, let's do a superset next. I want to do this press with a fly movement. What fly movement do you want to pick?"
Right.
And I'll let them pick. Right.
Right.
And they might say, "Oh, let's do this cable incline fly that I do that I like."
Yeah.
I go, "Okay, I never fucking do those."
Yeah.
But I'll hop in and do them. Because it's also fun to just do different shit sometimes.
Yep.
Like, you know, like I get it. I've been training a long fucking time. Like, so it's fun. So yeah. I like that too, you know. You don't have to even be a good bodybuilder for me to do your workout. Sometimes.
You're going to find something, and I can tell you this right now, like long term, I'll end up, once I'm healthy and everything's rolling, I'll end up back to 90% what I do. But there are some pieces to this that will come with me permanently. Like,
yeah.
You know, well, the wrist wrapping for the lateral raises off cables, night and day. I'm sure Joe Bennett could break it down for me why holding it with my hands is so different. But I'm telling you, man, it whipped my ass the first time I did a rest pause on those things. I was like, how are my hands that involved?
That's interesting.
It's a $20 investment in buying those stupid things. And now since people have seen them on my videos, I'm so lazy. I'm sorry, guys. But they'll be like, "Hey, where do I get those wraps?" I'm like, "Go to Joe's page. There's a link on there somewhere."
Right.
That's how I found them.
Well, you have the right machine for it. You have that Atlantis side lateral at that gym.
But I also use that on, like, so, you know, in front of a cable crossover.
Oh, yeah.
Leaning
yeah.
back on an incline yeah. down low, use that. I mean, I found about three different ways to use them that are awesome. You know what I mean? And complete game changer. And you also find out where your weaknesses are, because as you get tired, the arm wants to start drifting forward and becoming more of a quasi front raise. So it's like you got to remind your training partner, keep that fucking arm back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, there's been a lot of gems, man. So, you know, I definitely recommend, he's another guy, John, that I think guys should watch. He puts a lot of shit out there for free, and steal what you like, throw away what you don't.
Right. But just like what Chris said, you don't even have to know anything. You just have to copy.
It's true. You know, and the thing is, though, it's always been, here's the difference with me is, I could watch John's stuff and, you know, go through the whole process and put it together. I didn't want to. For $550, he'll do it for me.
Right.
So that's what I do. And you know, he's like, cool. And he hits me up every week and we're, you know, he wants to make tweaks and stuff. So it was very worth the value. But it's one of those things where, and same thing when I hired Dante, like there were websites I could put it all together. I was like, fuck that. I just want to go to the guy that did it. Tell me what to do. It's easier.
Right. Well, that's what I'm doing with Chris right now with properties.
Yep.
I'm like, what do you do? Look, these are the three I'm looking at. What do you do?
Yeah. And that's the thing is, why would you, to me, it's simple. If you have one of two things in life, you have time or you have money. When you have money, you usually have less time. When you have more time, you usually have less money. So you have to decide what you're going to invest. And for me at this point, it was too much time with my clients to go try to turn my brain off and not be dusty and create a weird program for me. Because at the end of the day, what would have ended up happening, I'd be in the gym doing fucking deadlifts. That's kind of different. I did them at the end.
No. I occasionally, and it's, how do I put this? I wish maybe I would have done this more. It might have been good for me. But now, in the current state I'm in, if I get, remember we were talking about when your schedule gets fucked up?
Yeah.
So the other day, my schedule got randomly just tossed. And I was supposed to train at 4 in the afternoon. And all of a sudden, I had to train at 9 o'clock at night. And the gym closes at 10 on Fridays.
Right.
So only good thing I got the keys, right? But you know what I mean? So I'm like, it's just unusually late. And I wasn't going to have a partner. So it's going to be solo delts at like 9 o'clock at night. And I was super tired and exhausted. So I just did like a completely different shoulder workout.
Right.
I made myself sit down and write up something like almost backwards. Like,
to make sure you didn't try to do what you always do and it not go well. So
yeah, I did. Let's do nothing that I could compare.
Right.
I'm not going to have.
I'll still train my nuts off.
I'm not going to have poundages in my head. I'm not even going to know how they register relate to my current strength levels. I'm just going to take all that stress out of it and just make sure I have a good fun workout where I just blast the delts. So I set up like a superset that I never do and I put it backwards so it really fucked things up. And then I. You know what I mean? I the whole shoulder workout was like 35 minutes tops and
you
I only
smoked.
Yeah. I did like 6 working sets.
Right.
And afterwards I was like, fuck, was that ever an awesome workout?
Right.
Like it's fucking awesome. Like, and it was fun. So I like doing that sometimes. So when my schedule gets thrown for a loop, it's an opportunity for me now to do something like that, because I like to be progressive normally and try to like focus on.
I think that's you just did exactly what I did when I hired John, which was let me not fuck myself up trying to do what I always do.
Yeah.
Because it might not happen. And then I knew I'd be leaving the gym pissed. Like if I went to the gym and got, 675 for 5 on deads, I'd be livid.
Right.
I mean?
Whereas for me, that's like a world record.
So it's like, but if I go in with some obscure thing he's got me doing, these are all new numbers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And some parts are funny because we bumped the volume up in some areas, So I told him, he was laughing because I was like, the press day whips my ass. And he's like, okay, how's legs? I'm like, easy.
Right.
He's like, really? Yeah. I'm sure in his head, the press day was easy and the legs was going to be hard.
right.
I don't do that kind of volume, dude. My shoulders feel like they're going to explode. We're doing 2 days ago, we're doing dumbbell incline skull crushers, and I usually do those with like 75. I was using 45s. Fuck.
Right. How's that that nitro leg press that you're using? That Nautilus.
I love it. We just started using it because I just found this. Well, I shouldn't say found it, but went back to this gym. And John's got me doing it on a superset. So usually what I'm doing is like an adductor. Right. A heavy blast out adductor, and then I run over there and do it unilateral, actually, usually. The video you saw wasn't. But that thing unilateral,
that's a tough machine. They have one at Gold's Venice, and I've used it a couple times. I really like it.
You should get one.
And then I was just at my next episode of Mutant on a Mission that comes out this week, actually, is from Kai Jack's gym in North Carolina. And he had one there, and I was like, "Shit!" I got on it, and I just like did like
that's
a warm-up
the universe
set.
Talking to you, Ron.
I was like, "I like that. I like that piece." It's kind of an odd piece too, right? You don't see a lot.
Oh, I never see it, but I love it because it hits totally different. But the cool thing I find is Matt and I are almost the same height, but his legs are like 7 feet longer than mine, and the machine hits us both exactly the same.
Oh, okay. No,
both
it's a good. Piece.
We could both put our feet down low. And I'm like, all right, we'll stay at this gym for a while.
Right, right.
You gotta, I think you could mute on a mission that gym if he's nice enough to me.
Really? You're just are you still at Independence a lot?
Yeah, yeah. No, okay. I've got a few, man. This city, I have two more guys building gyms right now that I'm helping them outfit.
Right.
So, you know, I really need everyone to be successful and stay in business so I can bounce around town and have fun.
There's a little bit of money floating around Scottsdale, so lots of gyms opening. The Phoenix Scottsdale area.
Exactly.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So we did like an hour and a half here, Dusty.
That's what happens. I mean, basically, I feel like what we need to do on these episodes is actually go in and sit at Earl's and just talk, because it's essentially what we're doing. But that way we can actually eat the pizza, have the steak and rice, and
talk with our mouths full.
People can really see how we usually do this, because that's what I feel like we're doing, is just we're having our meeting over steak and pizza and with chicken on it.
Yeah. I don't know about the talking while I chew thing. That might turn a lot of people off on the YouTube channel, but you know,
I turn people off all the time. It's fine.
So we do have a few guests lined up. Like I said, you know, we were supposed to have Joe today, and then we were going to do a no guest episode next week. But yeah, we
might have to push that then, and either get Joe or one of the guys that we got lined up. To come forward, you know.
So we'll get moving on this. It's very interesting, the scheduling, because what happens is we are now in three different time zones.
Such a mess.
Your mountain.
I have my own.
I'm Pacific. You're mountain. Scott's in Central. That's Detroit. So he's like Central time, or is it Eastern time out there? I can't remember.
I think you might be Eastern, yeah.
Yeah, and then if we have a guest, that might be a fourth time zone. So it's a lot to line up, but we got some people waiting in the wings, so we'll definitely get them on. But we thank you guys. Send us your listener questions, comments about the show, guests you want to see. Got some cool requests for guests that I got to mention to you when we're off air, Dusty. You know, some nice people. I was like, oh shit, we could get them easy.
Yeah, that'd be good.
People want to see them, so that's cool. Because you know, we're always thinking, and we want to get, you know, big guests that everyone's going to want to listen to. But there's also too like a ton of super interesting people that, you know, maybe not all of you know, but they make for a great episode.
Oh, for sure. You know, I've got a few in my mind that I would love to get. Scott knows a female one very well. That's probably one of the smartest people I know. Okay. I think she, you already know who I'm talking about. She would be a phenomenal guest.
Yeah. She'd be
only
cool.
Problem is she's so damn smart. I don't know if the rest of us can keep up.
Yeah, you want to feel fucking stupid. Yeah, and I've also had, like we said, we got this really loyal female listener base who's they're requesting. They're like, Dana was awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's try to get maybe one more female in before the 20th episode.
Right.
Right.
Have they dropped suggestions though? I mean,
I had a couple suggestions.
All right,
pretty
good.
Interesting ones. And I'm like, oh shit. Those are like, oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
Kendra is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Hey, if we want to go down that route, Dusty, just give me the nod. I'll start sending some text messages. See if I can get someone from that industry on the show, which really not that much different from the fitness world, to be quite honest.
Same industry. Are you kidding me?
It's the same industry, essentially. So yeah. Jesus.
You like how we still couldn't make it to the end of an episode without me dropping some of that shit in there?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
We were doing so good.
Doing so good. We almost had a porn-free episode. I'm just trying to get one. Just one.
I'm sorry.
One porn-free episode.
You drug the exit out too long, and I jumped it in there.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you soon, my friend. Good luck with the new training program. I'm going to definitely, I know my brain. I won't be able to help it. I'll be trying to figure it out and put it together by watching your Instagram and see if I can build the program.
You notice I'm only putting like one exercise in at a time.
Yeah.
I think people are seeing this shit.
But I'm going to be watching and I'm going to build it and then I'm going to show it to you and go, did I get it right?
How we doing?
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. It might take a month or two by just watching all your stories and marking them on the calendar and all that stuff. So we'll figure it out. And if you post a story a day late, I'll catch it because I'm gonna remember your outfits.
Girl, wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm on this.
Pants are always the same, but the shirt changes.
So. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll see you soon, buddy. And remember, everybody, it's just bodybuilding.